I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to see the recent film Good Night and Good Luck, which reports on the bravery of the broadcast journalist Edward R. Murrow during the height of the McCarthy era, as he bravely challenges a timid government establishment that allows Senator McCarthy to ride roughshod over the Constitution. And he urges American citizens also to return to our bedrock values that have made America great. He reminds us with the quote from Shakespeare, "The fault, dear Brutus, lies not in our stars, but in ourselves." That comment, I believe, applies with equal force when we consider our nation's dysfunctional immigration law and certain structural impediments to a functioning immigration system. Today, I'd like to mention another vestige of the McCarthy era, the Immigration and Nationality Act, passed in 1952 over the veto of President Truman. In my talk, I'm sure I'm going to attack some sacred cows, but my purpose is not to do that merely for the sake of attack, but rather because I think they need the curative attention of public scrutiny. So the first thing I think, and this is very, very foreign to the concepts in the Immigration and Nationality Act, I would suggest that we stop treating foreign citizens inhumanely as they encounter our immigration system. I think we need to understand that this global world with instantaneous media communication will generate, as we saw in Brazil, reciprocal mistreatment of U.S. citizens, where they too have been subjected to fingerprinting requirements and who knows what else. I'm not saying people shouldn't be fingerprinted. I'm just saying that our laws need to be sensitive, and maybe we should just banish the word alien because it has such a pejorative connotation. The first thing I would do would be to take a close look at Section 214B, the immigrant intent requirement, and see whether it is still serving a function that was intended at the McCarthy era before instantaneous media communication. I think there are still fundamental lacks of due process in much of the immigration system, and that would include the consular interview. I don't understand why there could not be video recordings funded by user fees of every consular interview and allowing certain classes of non-immigrant applicants to have some form of speedy appeal. With all respect to Mr. Tatush's remarks, I think that people beyond consular officers know the conditions in foreign countries rather well, and that there could be an appellate process that would be meaningful. I also think there are no real standards of establishing when the burden of proof has been satisfied in showing that you're entitled to a visa. This Department of State would do well to define when is enough, rather than just say, I'm not convinced and you haven't persuaded me, Mr. Applicant, because you haven't carried your burden of proof. I would suggest that perhaps the U.S. should propose a treaty outlining international minimum rights of foreign citizens who apply for visas anywhere in the world. The next thing is, I think we should stop treating U.S. citizens inhumanely. My sense is that we've for far too long engaged in a ruse that is called labor certification, where there is a so-called test of the labor market, and U.S. applicants are put through a ritual of applying for a job that's already filled in most instances. I don't think that makes sense. I think we should return to what was the original design of labor certification, namely that the Department of Labor reports on occupations in which there are shortages and allow employers to fill those shortages in a much more market-driven way than the charade of labor certification. I think we should stop treating U.S. citizen children inhumanely when we deport their parents, and I think we need to have a much speedier petition adjudication process withstanding. I also think our laws do not promote America's economic prosperity. Let's take, for example, Section 212E, the two-year home residence requirement for J-1s whose skills are on the shortage list or who have received government funding. In a day when there is global competition in the developed world for the brightest minds, does it really make sense that we put people through our educational system only to force them back into their home country, or perhaps, if not to their home country, to a U.S. competitor, a competitor of U.S. companies? I don't think so. Does it make sense to have rules that are involving a balance of economic motivation and labor protection only administered by the Department of Labor, when the Department of Commerce and the Department or the Small Business Administration has no voice in those rules? I don't think so. I think that there, as I said before, is a great deal of rulemaking delay, that you can wait decades for certain regulations to come out. I'm going to have grandchildren before the regs come out in some instances, and my children are only in their teens. I think the Congress has not done enough to have regulatory oversight over the agencies and force policy harmonization. It is not an answer to say that they are communicating behind the scenes without telling the public, the stakeholders, what those communications are and how we can know what the rules are. And I think that we've seen in DHS, not to leave Susan unmentioned, a certain deviation from the concepts in the Homeland Security Act. I don't know, for example, why USCIS, which is a benefits arm, has been allowed to establish a fraud detection center within it. I would have thought that that was the police arm that should be ferreting out fraud. I don't know why ICE decides on humanitarian parole decisions when that's a benefits application that should be adjudicated. And I don't know why CBP decides on waivers of inadmissibility, because the waiver is a benefit. And so I would suggest that we ought to return to a concept where each agency or bureau focuses on what Congress has asked them to do. And I don't think we should leave Congress out of this. Congress must stop immigration earmarks and stop engaging in ad hoc lawmaking. It used to be that immigration legislation was the subject of committee hearings, where section by section analyses were published so people could know what the law was intended to do. And now we never ever get that. I mean, if you hope to have that, you've been drinking something strange in your Kool-Aid, because what happens now are our backroom discussions in conference. We have E3s for Australians. We have diversity visas that originated for the Irish. We have H-1B cap exemptions for educational institutions, but not for employers. All of these things are targeted, and they make sense in a micro sense, but in a macro sense, the agency is left to have to issue regulations for one nationality when it could be focusing its energies on a wider net that would make the entire system more functional. With that, I'm going to leave that food for thought with you and ask any of the agencies if they have any comments.